The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
What it is, what it do, with the One Fall Podcast, Joshua Adam Lamarthot, your casual, out-of-touch wrestling fan now these days, with the ultimate babyface, Mr. Joel Johnson.
How goes it?
And the futurist, the best there is that we have, our fearless leader on the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, it's Mutton.
Oh, that's well done. It's been a while since I heard that. Hey, what it is.
Yeah.
Hey, this is the first show that we're all recording since the end of the G1. So if anyone wants to take a victory lap, I think
the casual fan that didn't watch a second of the G1 won. Woohoo! It was right in the middle of the NBA playoffs.
And with what happened with the briefcase, in some ways you got bragging rights there too, if you ask me, Joel.
What happened at Power Struggle got spoiled for me, and I was floored. I was absolutely floored. And I was like, so if they had just done this at the G1 instead of waiting until Power Struggle, I would have won. What is this? But Josh won, so we congratulate him.
I'd rather win fantasy, but I'll take the G1. The one thing I didn't try to win over the one thing I overly try to win. Of course, that's the way that it goes.
That is the way it goes. Maybe if you paid no attention to fantasy, you'd have a shot.
Yeah.
Stop probably. Watching the NFL.
Yeah, maybe that's the way it goes. But nonetheless, I will take my victory lap for the G1. Thank you very much.
I'm just wondering personally how long this, if we're talking fantasy, how long is this survivor pool going to go on with me and Devin here, in it to see who wins the thing here.
I know. It's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy right now. I didn't think you guys were good this long being correct, but now when you have the bet against the Jets every single week, it's like...
They're on bye next week. We didn't use the Jets this week.
I don't think he did
Dallas
either.
And it barely happened. Yeah. It's gonna be crazy, but anyways, yeah, that's where I'm like, oh, so close to the money. If you would just pick somebody,
you get the Jets in week 17. Anyways, we're here to talk about wrestling. We have the pay per view last night. We had Full Gear. To quote Joel, probably the best American pay per view this year. I thought some of those summer WWE pay per views were good. Obviously, everything AEW has been fantastic this year. Outside of like one match I really didn't care for, and we'll get into that, I thought it was a really fantastic night.
I think they started the card off right. I think starting with Kenny Omega.
Well, that was
and Hangman.
Smart too, because do you think they planned that because they knew the Biden speech was coming? So they counterproductive programming on that, or do you think that was the plan all along?
I think that is the plan all along. I think you want to start all your pay-per-views really hot. And starting with Kenny Omega, which, by the way, I've gone back and rewatched Kenny Okada 1. And then you just are reminded constantly of how good Omega is. And you just see how good Hangman is. And you see how those styles mesh together so incredibly well. The two of them are going to main event a pay-per-view for AEW at some point, and it's going to be a big blow-off for the story that they're currently telling.
I didn't think it was as good as everybody else did, that match, to be honest with you. I thought it was a little rushed. I would have liked it to be slowed down a little bit. I think there's times they could have slowed down and told the story a little more, especially about these two friends and that they have to beat it on each other. And I just think that they could have. I mean, if you look at a match like Darby Allin and Cody, they took time to breathe and that helped build the finish. I think they could have done that more. It felt rushed to me. It was good, but rushed. Very athletic, but rushed. But I can't complain too much about that, because if there's one problem with this pay-per-view, it's that it was way too damn long. Yeah. I mean, it was 3.5 hours plus. How much did it go? Like three?
Three hours and 43.
The one thing WWE is doing better than AEW. It's the one thing WWE is doing better is the short pay-per-views.
Yeah. I think 2.5 hours is ideal, give or take 15 minutes right now. Like, that's about, and it came through with the crowd. I mean, in the MJF and Jericho, the crowd had no energy left, and they didn't have much left for the main event either. And how much can you have left after that tag match as well? So, I mean, yeah, if there's, it's why I wouldn't call it the best pay-per-view in North America, because it's too long. But this year, yeah, still, it was an excellent pay-per-view, and it was a very solid opening match. I just, yeah, but if they had breathed, well, you know what you could do is you don't need to do all those long video packages, and you don't need to have a segment to get everybody on the pay-per-view, people like Miro and, you know, Archer and stuff like that. We'd save that for Dynamite.
Yeah.
Pay-per-view,
yeah,
just give me the matches.
I agree. Joel?
Yeah. No, I can agree with that. I think there's certain things that definitely need to be trimmed. I enjoyed this, and I think this sets up AEW nicely for a future main event. We'll get to who Kenny will face. And it creates a good story for, ultimately, I think, when Hangman does finally get out of this darkness that he's currently stuck in. It feels like Hangman just...
The thing is... Okay. Two things. Number one, I think one problem with it was I don't think anybody thought that Hangman was winning. I think that was an issue. So I don't think anybody.
I did.
You did? Okay.
Joel did too.
To a degree, I was like, it would make sense because it pushes more towards the cleaner.
Yeah, I suppose. But I didn't feel like the crowd bought that. That Hangman was going to win at any point in time. But the other thing is there was the part where after the Bucks win the titles, and I know we'll get to more of this later, when, Kenny came out and Hangman came to the entrance and didn't come to the ring, and the announcers missed it. So there is a story there. They're keeping going, definitely. But the announcers missed it completely, and so it didn't get further the way I think they would be interesting to see how they book it to kind of make up for that.
Yeah, that was definitely a miss by them. I noticed Hangman right away. That was the first thing you... And it was it's a shame that that got missed, because that's absolutely a thing that they should have pointed out.
Yeah, after he had left, they said, was there somebody in the shadows? I mean, I'm like, are you kidding me? Now Tony Khan's on the headset with Vince McMahon going, tell him the story, pal! You know? Yeah, that is a shame. So, but it's not over. Obviously, it's a long-term thing. And, well, it's definitely set up something else.
I do want to take a few steps back, and I want to talk about the pre-show with Serena Deeb and...
That was a good match.
What was her name?
Allison
Ray, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I thought that was a good match, and I really am happy to see Thunder Rosa pop up again. Because there were the rumors that she was more or less guaranteed to go to WWE NXT, and she absolutely still could, but it's nice to see.
She was under contract for another year. I thought that was a...
Well,
that I had heard that she was under WWE contract for another year.
It seems to be that if she gets a nice enough offer, it seems like Corrigan lets them go, because they let Ricky Starks go, and I think they let Eddie Kingston go as well, so both of them could sign with AEW. So I think
Kingston,
that,
I think, was with TNA, wasn't he?
I thought he was NWA.
That's something worth talking about. If we're going to talk about this this Hangman match, well, I guess we're talking about Serena Deeb now, but, you know, Don Callis there. That's
a big deal. And Tony said in the press conference, the post show for this, that he likes working with other company. He likes working with AAA. Sure. He likes working with NWA, and him and Corgan have been working very closely in booking these NWA matches. It's fascinating because the NWA women's title seems to be more valuable than the AEW women's title. And I mean, I think there's tons of factors why the women's division is currently in the state that it's in for AEW. And I think part of it is the pandemic and the lack of Joshi wrestlers that you're able to bring in. I really believe they were the ones that were going to carry this division until everyone else kind of got up to snuff and kind of shook off some of the greenness that they have. But that said, I am enjoying the NWA women's title, and it's being featured fairly well on AEW. And it's just showing that if you're willing to work with people, I think you can tell really good stories that way. And I don't think it hurts AEW. And matter of fact, I think it helps NWA because they're taking a bit of a licking because of this pandemic. But they're also featuring talent that AEW can start using and feature in other matches down the line to give different competitors and hopefully act as a little bit of a stopgap until the Joshi wrestlers come back.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right with the Joshi wrestlers were supposed to carry the division. I think that's obvious. I think they've done a pretty good job in bringing in the talent that they can that's out there, that's available. But it's fairly thin. I mean, that's why actually I was surprised that Shida regained the title or, you know, held on to the title because it feels like there's nobody for her to face. You know, I guess maybe Britt Baker will be next, but just as a guess. But yeah, I mean, it feels like there's nobody for her to face. So I thought it would be time. Nyla Rose would be more interesting in that position and everything. But who knows, man? I'm definitely wondering if there's going to be another match, you know, where the NWA champion goes over the AEW women's champion. That seems like the logical build. But that again looks like it needs to be Thunder Rosa. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it could.
But it was a good match. I mean, Serena Deeb, I mean, there's somebody who really has overcome a lot to get where she is. You know, I mean, she really did overcome substance abuse and the different issues. And there's many times her career could have been over. And here she is. She looks in incredible shape and she's wrestling really well. And you know, you have to be happy for her.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you can, and she's signed to AEW, so she's an AEW, she's under that contract, and she said she wants to be the leader, she wants to help that division, and I know a bunch of people are very, very critical of AEW's women division, but I feel like if we look at history, how long it took WWE to get to the point that they are, we've been spoiled from basically, I think, 2013, 2014, when that women's division in NXT really started to kick off.
But even then, it's only a few people that carry it.
Yeah.
You know, and when they've tried to put in other people into that position and elevate them, it hasn't worked. So it's only a few people that are carrying it. So, I mean, I think when people, if it's that easy, you go and go start a women's wrestling company and see how quickly you can build it up. Go for it. You know, it's not easy at all.
No. And I think the one of the things is, and Tony in the post took full blame for the build for Shida and Nyla. I think there was an issue with Vicky's schedule that prevented them from doing a build heading into this. And he said, yeah, I should have adapted and I should have done something differently. And I take full onus of that. It's really nice to hear the guy that's in charge of the company taking onus for stuff like that and being open and honest with the fan base. I think, again, that's one of the things that AEW does well is, I feel for the most part, they're still a wrestling company, so there is still a carny element to everything, but I do feel like they don't, for the most part, they don't treat their fans stupid, and they're honest and upfront with them, which I think helps make a difference and creates a bit more of a room for forgiveness.
Absolutely, I agree with that. Got nothing else to add on it, because you said it all.
Josh, you got anything?
Got it. Nailed it all. Everything you said. I will say, like, I do like the addition of Serena Deeb. She's shown a lot there. I think they nailed it to the broadcast. That not only as a competitor, but stuff that he gets to have behind the scenes as a coach. We know what she did for the NXT women's division and helping them grow. We said it when she got let go in the cuts. We said that was a bad cut by WWE for what she could do as far as a coach there. Allison Kay is someone that, you know, when NWA got, I liked her talent, I liked the way she cut a promo. I think she's a super talented woman wrestler, and I think Thunder Rosa is an absolute star that they can have. So there's buildings there. I mean, look, I mean, everyone wants to credit WWE for their women division, but they're in a real spot right now where they just rushed through the best program they had with Sasha and Bayley for no reason, and now you're getting stuck with programs of, like, Carmella versus Sasha and Asuka versus Lana. This is where you're going. So, well, yeah, WWE has maybe a better women's program to a lot of people, and AEW may be getting knocked down a little bit. there is pieces there that AEW is finding and growing, and the Josie girls were a part of that, but there is very slowly some momentum going towards the women's division, Britt Baker being a part of that. And I like the forward momentum they have with WWE relying so much on the horsewomen. We don't know what the future is Becky is post-pregnancy. We don't know what the future of Sasha is with Hollywood and whatever The Mandalorian is going to lead to. We don't know what the future of Charlotte is and her
relationship with Amos. What is going on with Charlotte?
She's injured.
Do we know what the injury is or why? I got to ask that actually.
I think it was an MCL if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. So that's why there's no return date.
She's a little bit older now. I mean, she's been at it for, it feels like she's still, when we think of all these women still, from the NXT, we saw them grow, and it's hard to picture somebody, when you get to be older and you have an injury like the MCL, if that's what it is, that's can be very difficult to come back from.
And I don't know what's left for Charlotte. She's done everything. I don't know what the feud is with Charlotte. And then the rumor for WrestleMania is Ronda and Becky. I'm like, I guess Ronda gets her win back, but that doesn't really light a fire. You had your match with Sasha and Bayley, and it was a hell of a cell match.
Yeah. So that feels like a one-shot blow-off. I've heard that same rumor. It doesn't feel like – that doesn't feel – that's not something long-term. That's just WrestleMania,
And again, like, how much is Becky going to want to wrestle after she has a kid?
We will see. We are getting. Yeah, if she wants to go back on the road regularly.
The first match was really good. I thought the Deeb and K match was really good. Thunder Rosa coming out adds some excitement going forward in AEW.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Thunder Rosa's. That was the one thing I was looking for. I was curious if Thunder Rosa was going to come out. And then when the music hit, she came out. I was like, okay, this is a really good sign for AEW and NWA because you have that really strong talent in Thunder Rosa that you can potentially bring in and do a bunch of stuff with. So that's a positive sign to me. What's next, Josh?
What's next? So then we go, I believe, right to the main show from that point. And then we had Kenny versus Hangman, like you and I said, Joel. I kind of leaned towards Hangman. That promo kind of threw me off on Dynamite when he said, like, all I have is the whiskey and this is all that's left. And I thought maybe there's some momentum to go there. You can, maybe make Kenny lose and build up the cleaner character. But I maybe should have known when it was the first match where everything was going. These two put on a great match and liking where everything's going to go with Kenny going forward.
Like I say, to me, I think the big news on it was the Don Callis actually being part of the commentary. I think that's extremely interesting, especially since TNA is also working with New Japan right now with some of their performers. TNA as well as ROH both have a person in the New Japan Cup American contest that they're doing on December 12th. So that's very interesting. The other thing that's worth noting is that they used the Cinderella song, Don't Know What You Got. And now's a good time to plug the interview we did with the lead singer, Tom Kiefer, on We Talk Music. Go back into the archives. And go. It's a short interview. I think it's 15, 20 minutes, but go check that out for sure.
Very nice. Yeah, go check that out. Joel, anything else to add to this one?
Cheap plug. I will do a cheap plug.
Hey, man, our numbers are up and down right now. We can take all that we can need. Listen to all the great pods that we talk.
No, I'm ready to move.
It's spelled TOMKIEFER, just in case you're wondering. Don't know what you got. Jill is gone.
Next up, we have singles match. We had Orange Cassidy versus John Silver. I didn't see this match. I didn't see the next two matches, so I'll let you guys talk about these two matches.
I think Orange Cassidy was very generous in what he gave John Silver. I thought John Silver looked good. It started off comedic, and then they hit a nice little pace in the match. This was a nice, good match. I thought Silver looked good. I thought Orange looked good. Everyone came out looking decent in this match. I don't think this hurts or damages John Silver taking a loss. And getting a win for Orange is a good thing, and it just hopefully builds back that momentum that he had with with facing Jericho.
I mean, it's obvious that they're now leaning towards from the backstage segment towards Orange Cassidy, and probably it looks Kip Sabian and then Miro. That's my guess. You know, this again, we talk about this thing being 3 hours and 43 minutes. This match didn't need to happen here at all. This match could have been stuck to the pre-show as it originally was, or if it did have been 3 minutes long, because frankly, what's John Silver but a comedy character, somebody I enjoy, but it went too long. I mean, it's fine, but it didn't need to happen.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. I think they definitely need to figure out, and it's one of the things that Tony has talked about, learning and figuring this thing out and getting better at things. I think trimming some of the fat from pay-per-views is a thing that he'll have to.
Yeah, I mean, don't be afraid to not book everybody.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this absolutely could have been a Dynamite match. Yeah. You could have shown some flashes for Silver, just so that when you do start, if you do decide to start doing more with him, it's not something that comes out of completely nowhere. You can kind of plant those little seeds in fans. Orange getting the win was the right call, but I think this probably is a Dynamite match that should have happened there as opposed to pay-per-view.
I got nothing to say. I do agree with Mo when I did see it on the card. And look, I don't watch Dynamite as frequently as you guys do. I did kind of look at it. I'm like, that doesn't really seem like a pay-per-view match. And when I saw it on the original card, I assumed it was going to be on the pre-show. So I was kind of surprised that it did appear on the main show.
Yeah, so, we move on. 3 hours, 42 long.
Mm-hmm.
And that went about 10 minutes. Yeah. It's not right. 8 minutes, something like that.
Minutes and 40 seconds.
But I really enjoyed the next match, though.
Yeah, we have Darby Allin defeating Cody Rhodes to win the AEW TNT Championship.
This was a really well-built, very good psychology. This definitely helps elevate Darby. There were callbacks to the previous matches that these men have had. And it was very nice to see Darby get that win. I'm curious, what is the overall direction you think with Cody Rhodes now that he is Cody Rhodes?
The fact that he's Cody Rhodes is pretty big, you know, not something we should completely.
Do we know why WWE just let it go?
I believe it has something to do with you have to be able to use it within a certain amount of time. And they didn't have anything to use. I mean, they're not going to put out a Cody Rhodes, you know, documentary or anything like that. It was a while ago that he first filed the law or filed the patent for it. I think it was 2 years ago now that he filed the patent for the name because it was available apparently out there. But he's filed the patent for so many things, so who knows, right? But yeah, I mean, it's always been petty of the of WWE anyways, so
yeah,
it doesn't really do them any good.
They good on them just to kind of forfeit it finally. Took them long enough.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I really enjoyed this match. As I say, I think it was built really well. You talk about the psychology is strong. The psychology is strong not only for that match, but for the fact that it's the fourth match in the series. What are they doing with Cody now? I kind of think he'll win the title back. That's my guess. I don't know. I'm really surprised we haven't seen Brody Lee. What's going on there? Anybody know?
No.
Why Brody Lee's just been off television?
He has not tweeted anything. He's been very quiet, and we don't know where he is. I wonder if there's an injury, if there's something.
Title and then he was kind of gone, right? He had the stuff with Orange Cassidy a little bit too, right? This is why the John Silver stuff was going on.
Yeah, it seemed that way, but now they're clearly it looks like they're transitioning away from that with Orange Cassidy. And I don't know,
Miro and
I mean, they had set up a match that was between Cody and him that would be a blow off, right? They've each got the win. You know, you set up this great blow off and I don't know what they're going to do here with with Mr. Brody Lee, that's it feels like that's the elephant in the room. That's and whatever Cody is going to do might be tied in with him, but my suspicion is he gets the belt back. I think this was just to I think they're trying to elevate Darby Allin, don't get me wrong, but I don't see him as more than a month. I don't know.
It's been very interesting, the long-term direction, but this was a very good win for Darby to get. It's a nice, it's always good when you can get a big pay-per-view win like that, especially over someone like Cody. So this just helps Darby in the long term. I do think that there will be a title swap within a month, 2 months time. They may let Darby ride out until next year. And then for their big show at the beginning of 2021, maybe the time when he drops the title. Maybe that's Brody. Maybe Brody got hurt in the dog collar match. We're not fully sure where Mr. Brody Lee is.
And there's also, I mean, they set it up so Ricky Starks and, you know, I think he's probably the next guy to get a shot at Darby Allin on television if it continues to be regularly defended on TNA. Or not on TNA, TBS, sorry. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of my suspicion is Ricky Starks gets the first shot at Darby Allin here now. And, we'll see what happens after that. Obviously Brian Cage, obviously, you know, could be in that mix as well. So yeah, I mean, they've set up a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, we still have, we're still waiting for what, Will Hobbs' future is. Maybe Will Hobbs faces Darby in a match. Cause they had a match on Dark. And that could be tied in with Team Taz. There's a lot of threads that they can pull on. So they do have options on where they can go.
Somebody go on to the next match. I thought you would transition on to the next match there, Joel.
Next up, we got Sheeta defeating Nyla Rose. I didn't like this match at all. It was okay. It was fine. I wasn't a big fan of it. In the end, with the Vicky stuff, just was whatever. Do you guys want to skip this?
I don't know. It's too bad that Vicky missed her spot. That definitely hurt the match. That, you know, she only had one spot and she missed it. She didn't trip the leg properly. She just and that made it look a little bit foolish. That definitely hurt the match. As the match as a whole, I just like these two's chemistry. I think she does somebody. I think she does somebody who shows baby face fire. I think you can believe that she's not as big, not as or as strong. She shouldn't win, but she has more heart. I think that's what the storyline is, and that was the same storyline as before. Like I say, it's just to me, I don't know where you go with her next. I mean, like Britt Baker, fine, but I don't know. Yeah, that's the part that confused me is the actual finish. But I mean, I enjoyed the match. I don't think it was great, but I don't think it was awful either.
I didn't think it was awful. I just thought it was fine.
Yeah, it was middle.
I don't really enjoy
road.
Nyla Rose this much. That's why.
No, I like Nyla Rose.
I'm mixed on her. I like Sheeta. I think not even that I don't like Nyla Rose. I like her aggressiveness. I think her aggressiveness is well done. I don't know if the combination with Vicky is working really well because I thought Nyla was okay as a promo by herself.
What's the point? Yeah, Nyla was a really good promo.
Yeah.
So what is the point of putting her with Vicky just because she's saying everybody gets a belt who has a manager and that's how you get title matches and then she doesn't win it. And then obviously they're obviously building, you know, to Vicky berates her and to turn her baby face. But I don't know. It just seems odd. And Nyla is a baby face? That. If you're Vicky, who do you bring into fate? Like, I don't know. It seems very confusing to me.
I mean, Awesome Kong.
I mean, they canceled Glow, so she's got kind of an open schedule.
Yeah.
I think that boat has sailed.
She retired,
we'll
you think?
She's clearly, I mean, you could see it when she was last here. I mean, she can't move like she once did. She just, I don't know. I'm not so confident that the injuries and the years have caught up to her, it looks to me like.
Next up, we have Young Bucks defeating FTR. We finally got this match after years and years of anticipation. Injuries on both sides, respect to both men that went through injuries in this. And the Young Bucks win the AEW Tag Team Championship in 28-35.
So I got a question for Josh. I just want to see if he, because I know you only saw 5 minutes, but looking at the trunks and the gear for both men, what were they paying homage to? I think you'll like this if you didn't notice it.
I couldn't tell that, but I will say the end with the no flips, just fist and no kicks or whatever. I thought that was so brilliant how it happened. Of it took the Revival doing a flip that cost them, and then a kick went in it for the Young Bucks. I thought that was beautiful for an ending.
Well, it's too bad you missed it, because it was Excalibur who pointed it out. With that, what they're paying to. One of them was wearing the Bucks. They were wearing what? Purple and gold. And FTR was wearing white and green.
Selfish Lakers. Yeah.
You bet. Yeah. You bet.
That was the first thing I thought. I was like, oh, I hope Josh notices this, because this is he would like this.
If I was paying more attention in it, I would have. That's fantastic. Them being from California, of course.
Yeah.
And they have. And they have tag team title championship hats, which I thought was another funny little nod to the success a certain basketball team had this year.
Yeah, that was cool. That was super cool. As far as the match, after all those years, did it live up to the hype? I think it absolutely did.
I think so as well.
I
know you didn't see all of it, but the ending, like you say, the psychology was great, Josh. It was. And it was even better if you had seen the entire storyline. And just little things like the injury happens to the hand, and then they work on the hand some. You know, I mean, they just it was so damn good. It's probably, I think, the second best match I've seen in North America this year. Maybe the second best match I've seen this year. It's literally less maybe than the other tag team match that was so great with the Bucks versus Hangman and Kenny. And even then, I'd have to probably watch them back to back to really decide. I think the fact that they had a real huge crowd for that one is probably the only thing that makes me lean towards the Kenny and a Hangman match. But this was so good. It's just the fact that you know how hard that is to have years worth of hype and to actually live up to it. It's awesome.
So watching this, I was enthralled. Because everyone had heard about the MCL and the ACL for Matt Jackson, so we thought, oh, this will be how they write him off TV, and this is okay, but they could also win the title. So you really weren't entirely sure who was going to win what. You knew that the build was a little rocky for this, for sure, and probably saying it was rocky is a bit of an understatement, but man, you almost forget the build, and in matter of fact, I think most people have forgotten the build to this, because the match delivered at such a high level. And I'm going to put it out now, because we're getting closer and closer to our end of the year show. I think based on this match and the match at Revolution, I think that kind of solidifies for me who the tag team of the year is, because it's a tag team that has delivered in two big marquee matchups that everyone's like, there's a lot of hype to this. Can they deliver? Can they put on a good match? And both times the Young Bucks have been able to deliver. And FTR delivered tonight. I think everyone, it all worked out. You have a storyline where you didn't have Tully out there, so that hurt FTR. I liked the different color stars that FTR had on their jackets, signifying each time when they won a tag team title from NXT, Raw, SmackDown, and now AEW.
What was that?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't catch that. I did like the greatest tag team of all time, GTOAT instead of the GOAT, the GATOAT. tag team of all time. I did like that.
I think they did such a great job. Matt's, I don't think this was him selling. I think he legitimately was uncomfortable and in pain, but it added to the story so much. And when he finally got that kick, and just the fact that they won off a super kick, they didn't do the finish, they didn't go to the big spectacular finish of finally hitting it. It was, they were so beaten down and worn down, both all four men, that all it took was one super kick to get that win. This was incredible. I thoroughly enjoyed this. Tag team wrestling is one of the things that AEW does really, 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 really good. And it just goes to show this easily would have been, I really wish there had been a bigger crowd for this. I wish we were in not a pandemic, because man, I think this match would have blown the roof off the building.
Yeah, no kidding. I have to agree with that.
So now,
Go ahead, Joel.
I've got a question for you guys. We know from all reports with Matt's knee, there's an MCL tear and his ACL is thinning. And in the post show interview that they had, it sounds like he doesn't require surgery. But as Josh had pointed out, how smart is it to really continuously wrestle on that knee? What is the future for them winning these tag team titles? How long do they have them? Where do you think they're going?
Well, I can say this is the one time that you can say this is the advantage once again. I mean, that you can do this type of match and very physical matches, because it might be 2 months before they wrestle again. And that's fine, because, I mean, you're only doing a TV show once a week. And there's lots of ways you can hide it and keep him out of the ring for, you know, when they're not doing house shows, right? Like, even if the pandemic was going on, they wouldn't be doing house shows. I'm not sure anybody would be doing house shows anymore when we come back to it. But the fact that they can actually keep
WWE, you know, a schedule. They're saving money from not doing house shows, Mo. They said that in the last quarter.
Yeah, exactly.
To save money.
Now, a big portion of that is because of the how little they paid for the Thunderdome, but
yeah,
as well. So, but yeah, I mean, the fact is, I mean, they're saving money not doing. I'm not sure that, you know, house shows will ever happen again.
Yeah,
from a major company. So because of that, I mean, literally, I bet you in the next 4 months you could have Matt Jackson in the ring in two matches in the next two or three matches in the next 4 months, where he has a total of 5 minutes of ring time, and you could hide it just fine and he can heal up, hopefully. It's very possible to do.
No, I like that answer. I'm perfectly okay with that, because I do think next year we're going to get a trilogy of these matches over the next year and a half between these tag teams. And I don't know who ultimately comes out on top, but I definitely think FTR is going to be gunning for a win over the Young Bucks. And it's just the story that they can tell is going to be very intriguing where they go next. Because there's a lot of threads that can be pulled on with FTR. So,
And it's the fact that, yeah, I mean, the fact that they lost by going away from their game plan, you know, and doing a flip. I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, you know, I just picture, you know, on Dynamite, Tully Blanchard just laying into them, you know, that's the promo to fire them up. That's where we're going into this, and don't do that again type of deal. And next time they won't do that, and then they'll probably win, and then where do we go from there?
And the other thing that it they can also tell as a storyline is how valuable Tully is to the tag team, how important he is to keeping the title around their waist, and that's going to be something that I think we're going to see over the next couple weeks.
All right, so then we go to a match I thought was a piece of shit. the Ultimate Deletion match. I will quote Matthew from Botchamania about this, and it's very clear. The best part of the match was when Gangrel showed up. The worst part of the match, all the parts where there wasn't Gangrel.
I don't know. I liked it. I don't know.
I thought it was fine. I'm kind of done with these matches. I'm over them. And I think Joel brought the best point up when we were watching this is, the thing that these matches miss is Jeremy Borash. I think Matt is brilliant for sure, but in some ways you kind of look at, like, it's like the Attitude Era, right? There is a Vince McMahon and a Vince Russo, and together they made perfect music to bring you the greatest of the Attitude Era. When they were separated, it was not as good. Borash, Matt Hardy together is what the winning formula was. And even a little bit of Jeremy Borash by himself has been a winning formula. It was fine. I wasn't a huge fan. I did like seeing Gangrel. I did pop seeing Gangrel.
I liked it personally because I mean, it helps that I haven't seen as many of these because I'm, you know, not really watching the WWE product. So these kind of. Pardon me?
There it is.
That I'm not?
Yeah, so because I've seen so many of them in the last.
Yeah, that you would have seen so many more. I mean, so to me, I mean, I know what these matches are. I don't see them very often, you know. So I mean, that really helps. Probably why I enjoyed it more than you did. If I saw this all the time, I'd be done with it too. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see it. I don't see it all the time. I really like the spot with Hurricane where he said it's been 2 years. I had to come into AEW to finish the story. You know, I thought that was funny.
That was funny.
I thought I was laughing during the fireworks thing. And the fact that there was a level of brutality to it that there usually isn't with these, to me, you know, made it, you know, made it significant. I liked it. I also liked, I think that even though Sammy Guevara lost, Sammy got probably the two most memorable spots, certainly the Swanton off the ladder and probably the backflip off the wheel. And those are kind of what, especially the Swanton is what they showed the most at the end there. And I think that kind of put him over in a bit. So I like it.
I
enjoyed it.
I think that is a very good point. This was definitely a lot more physical than what we typically see, because I don't think this match was meant to hide any aged wrestlers that can't really go in ring. I feel like Matt, to a degree, can still kind of do stuff in the ring, and you would feel that this was a lot more physical and a lot more violent. And I felt like that definitely kind of made it a little bit different. I still am a little meh on this. I think this is a match that's going to take a few days to fully sit in my head and just kind of let the water settle. But with that said, I don't know how much I like Sammy getting put in the trash can. I wasn't totally sold on that ending. I think this is a match that Sammy should have probably won. But I mean, if you want to do more deletion style matches, then probably makes sense to have Matt win.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first one that Matt Hardy's had in AEW. So therefore, I think he had to go over in it. Plus, it's not a real match, so I don't think it hurts Sammy to lose because it's not a real match. And one of the things I love about Sammy Guevara is he's willing to put himself and make himself look foolish. He's willing to take the jacket from MJF that's way too big and sit there with it on and look foolish. He's willing to be run over by the golf cart, you know.
I did foolish. Pop for the golf cart.
Yeah, he's willing to go in the trash can. He gets it. He's there to entertain. You know, I think that he's willing to, and because he's a heel, these things can happen, and he can get his heat back, no problem. So and he's young still, but he's also not a main eventer, and it's not time to elevate him yet. That time will come, but it's not the right time. I kind of figured that was what the whole purpose of this feud would be when it started, but as it played out, it became pretty obvious that wasn't, you know, wasn't what they were going to do. So
yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. Those are good points. And this is one of the things I like having these discussions, because then you get a different perspective and you kind of get to think differently about the match. You have your train of thought, and then you get to have another opinion that you respect that can help.
If they show anything from this regularly over the years, it'll be the Swanton spot. And that'll be good for Sammy.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we have MGF versus Chris Jericho to be in the Inner Circle. This was a fine match, and MGF beats Chris Jericho. He's now in the Inner Circle, and so is Wardlow. What did you guys think about this one?
It was an all right match. All right, go ahead.
It was my least favorite match of the night. I thought for two guys that shown such incredible chemistry together. Wrestling chemistry, I didn't think was all that good. It was pretty slow paced. The crowd was burned out. The psychology was fine, but it felt like they were going through the motions. I'm more interested in the long term storyline with it. What do you guys think? How long before the Inner Circle and MJF turn on Chris Jericho?
I think it's
Fight for the Fallen.
I think it's going to be sooner rather than later. You get the feeling that it's like how the match ended, I think is going to sit with Jericho, where he's like, because one of the storylines was how soft MJF is, and MJF outsmarted Jericho, I don't feel like he outbeat him. Like, if he had brutalized his arm and snapped the arm and put in the salt of the earth, then that would solidify MJF as not being soft. But the fact that MJF had to go with a little bit of cheating to get that win, I think that's going to eat at Jericho, and it's going to cause some problems. But I think MJF has to get a few wins for Inner Circle and start elevating Inner Circle. It'll be kind of like Jay White within, I think it was Bullet Club, though I think he kicked Kenny out right away. There was no rise up for him. I think it'd be more akin to Chaos, where he starts getting a couple wins, and then you start wondering what's going to happen, and then MJF flips the script on Jericho, and possibly maybe Sammy as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they do anything too fast. I mean, they take their time with everything in AEW, but I mean, you can see it coming. That seems to be the obvious where it's going. My only question is, when he goes, will anybody go with him? You know, will Jake Hager also go with him? Like, or will it be just him against all of the Inner Circle, the new Inner Circle? But I mean, that storyline, just the idea that MJF is going to be with the Inner Circle and have them as his group, that is another thing that puts him over and just to continue to make him a bigger star.
Yeah.
He's got all the potential in the world.
Absolutely.
Yes, he does. And then we have our final match, Jon Moxley, Eddie Kingston, in a I Feel Sorry for Renee Young, I Quit match. Renee
Piquette. And apparently Renee's mom watched the match as well, and she wanted to stop it multiple times.
Why?
She did? Why would she do? Why did you let her? Why?
I could pull up Renee's tweets, but she watched.
Renee watched it after. We knew that, but why?
Jeez.
I mean, I don't feel too sorry for Renee because she knows what she's gotten herself into, and that's who Jon Moxley is. He loves this. And again, you can get away with this match doing something like this when you don't have to wrestle all that often, but it's still not my favorite type of match. But it was the match I knew it was going to get. And for what it was well done. I mean, the psychology was strong. It made sense. Eddie Kingston, you have to be happy for Eddie Kingston's career resurgence.
Eddie Kingston has such a fusion of All Japan and just the hardcore style deathmatch within him. I really enjoyed this, and there was an uncomfortability to this, and just Eddie crying and then saying I quit. Just perfect.
That's the thing, because the promos were so good and so real, the match felt so good and so real. I mean, that helped it, right?
Yeah, I thought this was I've liked Moxley's title reign. I think he's had a couple really good programs in there. He's had a couple things here and there, but I think Moxley is proven that he is definitely a world heavyweight champion caliber performer, and he has wrestled several different matches throughout this title reign. Like, it doesn't feel like there is a one and done Jon Moxley type match. There are certain elements that will always pop up, brawling outside the ring, the violence. You could probably compare this to a little bit of the Brody Lee Moxley title match, but it's also, this was more violent and more personal than the Brody Lee match. So
yeah,
he
likes the hardcore matches. I think that's why the fact that Omega came out at the end now as the number one contender and said, yeah, we're going to have a match, and this one's going to be a wrestling match, unlike their lights-out match that they had. This one's going to be a wrestling match, and you can't beat me in that. And that psychology, I think that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, I love that as well. A beaten-down, very bloody Jon Moxley wants to shake hands with Kingston. Kingston walks away in tears, failing to win the biggest prize in professional wrestling to Eddie Kingston. You feel like this is the biggest thing for Eddie, and he lost. And then
it's Sorry, just it's those little things, you know, that make a storyline, that make them work, that make them sing, that draw you in as a fan, that AEW does generally very well.
And it's a perfect callback to Moxley and Kenny. We haven't seen them touch since their Lights Out match. Imagine your two of your biggest stars not interacting at all for almost well over a year. Almost a year, I think. I think Full Gear was when they did the Lights Out. So you got a year in between matches, and now you're picking that story back up again. It's just I'm really looking forward to Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley. When do the two wrestle? When do you have that match? Do you wait till Revolution?
That's obvious. I think it's the Revolution main event. Lance Archer has kind of poked himself into wanting to be in the pre-show he did, into wanting to be in the title picture still. We'll see with that. Of course, I could see the fam and Eddie Kingston all turning babyface and Archer versus Eddie Kingston there too, though. As far as his future, but yeah, I think it's a Revolution main event, and I think that because you've waited so long for it and it's a rematch, it's just going to do big buys. That's how it works.
And you're forgetting one other there's a bastard that is looming over the shadows, and I think he's going to be looking at Eddie Kingston. So you've got some threads that are going to be pulled on in the next several months. Josh, what do you think?
I just thought it was I'm not a huge fan of hardcore matches anymore. In wrestling, I don't know if you really need to do them anymore, but the promo that I saw was maybe the best promo I saw. And number one, him wearing the Shootout Mortad jersey from above the rim made me mark out. That was amazing. Just awesome. I lost my shit when I saw him wear that jersey. So that was dope. The promo was great. The passion was there. Just a shout out to Eddie Kingston. Obviously, if you've been following the wrestling scene for the last little bit, you've kind of seen him jump all over the place. So I'm glad he got his flowers. I was really rooting for him to get the win. I didn't think it was going to happen, but I think we were all kind of emotionally rooting for it because we know what his wrestling story has been, and I think they told that story so well in that promo right there. But I agree. Like, now you get the Kenny and the Mox match. It's the match we've been waiting for. It's going to be at the perfect time. I mean, is February, is there a WrestleMania pay-per-view, I think they said?
No, Double or Nothing, so in May.
Right, so that. So anyways, they're going to have that in February still. It's going to be a banger of a match. And then I think something I hadn't even thought about, Joel, you bring up the Pac stuff with Eddie Kingston and everything going on there. Do you think that he'll debut Pac during this Bunkhouse match with that Dustin Rhodes is in?
Ooh, interesting.
I'm not sure. I'm very curious because I think Pac is going to steal Rey Fénix. Because it's funny, because we have Rey Fénix versus Penta, and I think we've seen that Eddie leans more towards Penta, and Rey Fénix has definitely shown signs of not being happy in his current situation. Just the fact that we could get Penta and Rey Fénix as single wrestlers, I think that ties in with Pac. I think Pac will want to have someone with him, and I think he may bring Rey Fénix with him. I don't see...
It's funny, though, because how badly do you want to see Pac versus... Pac versus Rey Fénix? Bad do you want to see that match? Might be wrong. But you know the other match that I really want to see is Matt Sydal versus Pac. I just think that would be a hell of a match.
I think with how open AEW is, I think that could be a return match for Pac. And just build him up, because I do think one of the big marquee matchups for Revolution could be Eddie Kingston versus Pac.
It's Pac. He's Pac. Pac when he's Pac everywhere else in the world. In AEW, he's Pac. I don't know why, but it just is.
Potato, potato. That's going to be my... I'm going to call them both all the time.
You know what? I agree with you. From now on, we're calling him potato.
Potato? Okay. he's a very lean potato.
That he is. That dude is jacked.
Him versus
John Silver, I also want to see.
That video package that they did to reintroduce him, kind of remind him, I thought it was brilliantly done. It was incredible just from a production standpoint, and it definitely makes you excited for the bastard.
So, yeah, I mean, overall, I think it was a really good pay-per-view. I would give it an 8 out of 10, personally.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the night. There was nothing that was terrible. You know, it would be even better if it wasn't so long. Cut off 45 minutes to an hour, I'd be laughing.
Yeah. I agree.
Definitely. So there it is, the AEW show. You know, I thought it was, you know, I was up and down watching this pay-per-view. From what I saw, I thought it was good. I only said the North American thing because that kind of seems to be the overwhelming thing, but we trust Morton overall on everything. So, you know, excited to see where AEW goes overall. I will say, as far as the ratings go, and I've been saying this with the NBA ratings on the ISO and some of the NFL ratings, I think the Nelson ratings is such a trivial thing. I think it's kind of a past due thing. But I will say it was impressive with everything going on Wednesday with the numbers that AEW did do. I thought that was really impressive. Whenever AEW has gone against competition, they have kind of broken the mold. And I spot, you know, it's one thing to go against the World Series or anything, but, you know, with an American viewership going against that election coverage, when everybody was drawn in, I know in my house, CNN was on all the time, one way or another by default.
I was watching that. I put in more time watching that than anything else I can think of in recent memory, obviously.
I agree.
So, yeah, no, that's a very tough competition. It's going to take it. It won't be in January. It'll probably be somewhere. I don't think that we'll see the news coverage slow down and the ratings for that until probably somewhere near February or March of next year. So they'll continue competition. But AEW has, they work for their fan base. They're a very loyal fan base, and they do a great job, you know, with them.
I will ask you guys this. How far away are they? Because with what we've seen AEW now, they've been around a year plus now, and what they've been able to do this year. I'm interested in both your opinions here. And I still think it's some time away, but do you think they, or will they ever make the decision to pull on a Monday or a Friday?
I don't think they ever will. They don't want to go against football. They know what that brings. Friday, I don't think works because of basketball. I may be wrong.
There's no
on
basketball.
That.
There's no basketball on Turner on Friday. It's just Thursdays.
I don't know. I just don't see them doing it. I think Wednesday. I think they're happy where they are, and I think, Turner may want to put more into them. That could be a thing that happens, but I think that would be probably 4 to 5 years away from them wanting to really go at WWE. I think they're happy right now because they get to continuously spank WWE. Like they very seldomly does WWE win. It takes a Halloween Havoc for WWE to win. So I think Turner's happy, and from all accounts they're happy, and there's no rumblings of moving. So I'd say it's 4 to 5 years away from them thinking about. They really have to start cranking out. They'd have to start doing $1.5 million, $2 million for them to start thinking about moving in.
Yeah, I think they have to be. They have to put NXT completely away first. If they put NXT completely away, you know, to the point where they're getting $1 million and NXT is getting $500,000, then you could think about it. I honestly think that if they went head to head on Raw with it, that I don't think that you'd see Raw fall that much, and I don't think you'd see, you know, AEW change all that much either. I think they probably both still be drawing pretty similar numbers to what they are right now. There are obviously some people watching, but who are watching both, but I think they have their own fan base. But if they put away NXT and they start to grow, they may want to, you know, I mean, it depends. It depends on momentum, but part of that is also, you know, nothing's going to happen like that for a long time, probably at least 2 years. Certainly, it's not the type of move you make during the pandemic, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Anything else, guys, you want to hit before we get out of here?
New Japan.
New Japan, okay. But we won't. Let's just hit the main story of New Japan. There's no sense going into everything, but no. Just the main story of Jay White winning the briefcase. You know, I want to get the thoughts that he now looks like he's going to, you know, definitely he's going to go on the second night of the of the two-night Tokyo Go now, the January 5th, against either Ibushi or Naito, who will be facing each other on January 4th. It is very strange to me to think that Jay White's not going to have a January 4th match. It's also strange that they set up the thing with Evil to not have anything to do with that. And they also have Kenta, who beat Naito on the last night of the G1. And you know, it just feels like there's other threads out there that they could, storyline-wise, that they could follow. So, you know, if they just do Jay White just on the one night, you know, that's – but it was an absolutely shocking move. I mean, I did not see that coming.
I didn't either.
It shocked the hell out of me. It also – I got spoiled for it too, but it's a gutsy move, but it's again the type of thing where I go, Gato's a genius, you know. Gato's a genius.
It was shocking. It is mind-boggling where they're. I have no idea where they're going. I don't know. Because they had the press conference with Naito, and he had said he wants to face Ibushi on January 4th because Jay White's being a little bit of an asshole and being like, I only work January 5th. I won't be wrestling January 4th, so you got to agree to that. I don't know, because it just feels like it felt like they were absolutely heading towards Ibushi's coronation of winning the double championship. I really want them to split the titles, and I don't think we're going to get that. I feel like Ibushi beats Naito night one, and then all the pressure's on Ibushi to beat Jay. Because you can go into the storyline where Jay's beaten Ibushi a couple times. Can Ibushi finally successfully defend the title, especially after what can only be described as potential murder between him and Naito? They won't have a neck left after January 4th.
The problem is, that's the problem, though, here, is I don't feel like it's time for Naito to lose the belt either.
See,
it doesn't feel like as much as it feels like it's time for Ibushi's coronation. And I'm still not 100% sure I'm convinced on Jay White main eventing at Tokyo Dome. I feel like, yeah, that's the part that really confuses me about all this. I feel like we haven't seen the final chapter of whatever the storyline is going to be that night.
Yeah, I think there's still other pieces at play right now. And I do agree. I don't think it is time to take it off Naito, because I think Naito desperately needs a long, fruitful title reign, and defending the title at the Dome is very important for his legacy.
That it's been a year with him with the belt is one thing. If it was a year, a normal year, it would be fine. But with the fact that, you know, there was many months with no defenses because of the pandemic, it doesn't feel like he's had the reign that he deserves yet. So, Baker Mayfield got COVID. Anyways, sorry. As I see news flash across my screen. I got a little bit thrown by that, but it doesn't feel like it's time for Naito to lose the belt to me either. So I could see him holding it and winning both nights as well. Anything can happen.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to damage Ibushi in any way, shape, or form. And I mean, you head into next year, man. I'm very curious to see. This definitely has piqued my interest in the next couple months heading into the Dome Show, and I'm excited for the Dome Show. That's one of the things that kind of always creeps up at the end of the year, where you're always like, oh yeah, we got the Dome Show coming up, and we're gearing up for two nights of Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, yes, they'll have stuff going on, but it'll be the Super Juniors and the tag team until then. So typically you see the briefcase defended twice. This time I don't know that we'll see a second defense to the briefcase.
Yeah, I don't.
It doesn't seem like it.
No, I don't think so either.
So, all right. We'll have to talk more New Japan soon as we start to see the storylines play out.
Absolutely. Josh, you got anything else you want to add?
I just want to say, like, I haven't got to say it too much on a podcast. I mean, obviously you guys got the New Japan side. My wrestling viewership has gone way down, but I try to keep what I can. It, you know, been still watching WWE relatively the top 10 and such. But I, I don't blame you. I got to say, like, I just want to give Roman his flowers. Everything with the Roman Reigns stuff, I absolutely love right now. I think everything with that is fantastic. The stuff with Afa and everything at the last pay-per-view, I don't know how you don't go to Rock there.
WrestleMania, that's the only reason you turn this guy heel is because WrestleMania is going to be against The Rock. It has to be, which is weird without an audience. It's just super weird without
an audience. Oh, there's an audience there. There'll be an audience.
There'll be some audience, but not as
big. The Super Bowl is going to have 25%. Here's the difference. Here's the thing that I want to bring up, though. So Super Bowl right now will be 25%, or will it? Because that'll be just before the Biden administration takes over, and that could wipe out anything for these big stadiums with the Biden administration just wiping off, like, we're not having these big events happening at stadiums anymore. They could completely lock it down. Their COVID task force is getting knocked around tomorrow, so we'll figure out what they have there. Because I do feel like Vince seeing if the Super Bowl had 25, is like, well, goddammit, we're doing that. But I wonder what the Biden administration will be doing with COVID and big arenas. What you saw with Notre Dame on Saturday was absolutely revolting and atrocious, what we saw with that. So hopefully we don't have to see that. So I'm interested to see where everything goes with that. But yeah, really excited for what Roman did. And the last thing is, recently canceled my network because I don't really see any reason to watch anything until the Rumble, because Survivor Series, honestly, I really do feel the last time there was a good Survivor Series, last year was okay. Last year was good. But when Joel and I went to Toronto, this year's Survivor Series, what am I excited for?
Most of the Survivor Series for a long time haven't been that good. But you have to keep in mind, it is the one time to see these two shows interact.
Oh, my God, right? And they're bringing Eva Marie back.
Yay. WWE. You know what? I do enjoy the Roman stuff too when I've checked that out. That is cool. It's got to be.
And I mean, Jey Uso feels like he's being elevated, not to main event level, but I feel like he's an upper mid card guy now, especially decimating
SmackDown's Bryan. SmackDown's a fine show. I'm enjoying SmackDown.
Yeah. Same guy running it, but hey, it seems to be the better show. I mean,
it does. And I will say, Sasha on Mandalorian next week, so that'll be very exciting too for the wrestling world to get to see Sasha in that and see what her future is
She doesn't have to change her hair at all. She can leave it the color it is, and it's going to look like an alien. It's fantastic.
Yeah, the question is she one of the apocalypse sides of the Sith, or is she Sabine? The question that everyone's been wondering for nerdy Star Wars fans. I'm hoping Sabine. I really am for her, because if she's Sabine,
that's very interesting. How big of a role is this supposed to be?
Sabine is pretty big.
No, I mean, Sasha has. That's the thing. We don't know. I was under the impression it wasn't that big a role, but, we'll see.
I've heard different things. Sometimes you hear it's not as big, and some people say it's going to be shocked who she is, which led to some people thinking that she's going to be Sabine, which, if that's the case, she could get her own show being Sabine. I mean, who knows? I know there's a lot of people from Clone Wars and Rebels that are coming up here in the next few episodes. And Sabine has been one of the rumors ones with Ahsoka on the show already.
Let's see how good an actress she is first. Because there's wrestling acting and then there's real world acting.
Absolutely.
And not everybody is being good at both.
And this is my last word, and then we'll get out of here. I do want to give the one really cool thing about Mandalorian this week was we had a Calgary actor in there from Kim's Convenience in it. He's a friend, close friend of friend of the pod, Andrew Fun, for obviously being on Kim's Convenience. Paul Sun Hung Lee, Calgary native, biggest Star Wars geek you ever meet. He's always at the Calgary conventions, all the conventions, always has some kind of Star Wars garb on. So really cool to see him get his lifelong dream. And pretty sure the first Korean representation in the Star Wars universe. And I think one of the first Asian representations in the Star universe, and having a nephew that is of Asian descent, super cool that he gets to see that self reflected on there as we continue to extend that overall. But big year, obviously, for anyone Korean, with Parasite winning and now getting to be part of the Star Wars universe. And for Paul, being a Calgary native, being a huge Star Wars fan, that was really, really cool to see him part of the episode.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. That's a good way to go. That's better than any joke, I can tell you.
All right, everyone. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And until next time, the Raiders won. Cheers. Enjoy the day, people.
Goodbye. And good night, Ben.